sont arrivés. Ils s'installent sur la place.
Tu sais, les gosses seront jamais prêts. Faudra les faire répéter dimanche matin.
Moi, ben, non. Tu crois?
Nous sommes de sœurs jumelles, mis sous le signe des Gémeaux. Mi fa sol la mi ré, ré mi fa sol 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 ré do. Toutes deux demoiselles ayant eu des amants très tôt. Mi fa sol la mi ré, ré mi fa sol 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 ré do.
And this is Linoleum Knife.
Your Linoleum Knife.
Yeah, so is your face.
For a second, I thought you were going to play that Fatboy Slim song that's on the beginning of this side of the cassette.
No.
Because when you were fast-forwarding it, you stopped and that was playing it.
No. That was worse. It was Apollo 440.
God.
Stop the thing, William.
You were... Honestly, I thought you were just doing it to punish me. I was ready to just because I thought
I'll
you
put
were
that on the list though.
I thought you were going to do it to punish me.
No.
But that's a good song.
Yes,
that's from a movie.
Yes,
tell them what that movie is.
That is from The Young Girls of Rochefort, starring Catherine Deneuve, reteaming with her Umbrellas of Cherbourg director Jacques Demy, starring alongside her sister
Françoise Dorléac.
And here's a tip. If you ever really want to annoy people that you're playing celebrity with...
You're understating it, but keep talking.
Write Françoise Dorléac on a slip of paper and put it in the bowl. You'll never hear the end of it.
You will. It wasn't that you annoyed... Was it you or me that did
this? I think we've both done it on separate occasions, actually.
It isn't simply that they get annoyed. They become enraged. They become so angry that they accuse you of many, many things, not just elitism, but
cheating.
But cheating, yeah, like cheating. You're cheating at celebrity. That person isn't a celebrity. It's the thing of I've never heard of this person.
They can't be famous.
They can't be. And if they're dead, they could never have been anyone.
Right.
Well, you tell that to Catherine Deneuve. That's her sister.
Yeah, or to Roman Polanski, who starred her in Cul-de-Sac.
Yeah.
So yeah,
and she was a badass fake singing lady.
Yes.
Did she sing? Did they either of them sing?
Not in that movie.
Did either of them actually sing in Young Girls?
In Young Girls, no. They were dubbed by somebody else. But Deneuve has like she sings in Eight Women. That's Deneuve.
Yes.
Name. So you know, and I'm sure at some point she did a duet with Serge Gainsbourg because everyone does.
Probably.
You know?
I did.
Yes, indeed.
And it was great when I did.
I'm sure. It was very sexy. And you are Dave Weiss.
I thought we were going to keep talking about Françoise Dorléac.
We can come back.
And how angry people are that you would. Yeah, you should never. If you want to make friends and you happen to be playing celebrity at a party,
do not
put her name in the
No.
Because they'll just all get mad at you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're Dave White, film critic for movies.com.
I am. And you are Alonzo Duralde, and you are the film critic for The Wrap, WRAP.com. And if you don't read The Wrap, you might also still be reading Alonzo Duralde's film reviews because Reuters picks up The Wrap.
It's true.
So you could be like in a newspaper somewhere or on some other news website, and your name will be on the review.
I have always turned up on MSNBC, which is weird.
Have you really?
Yes. MSNBC.com, my former employer, but for whom I used to be the regular film critic, they have run one of my reviews that they got off the Reuters wire from The Wrap. So it all comes around.
So you should always read the name of the person writing the review because
it could be me.
Because it could be Alonzo. It will never be me unless it's on movies.com.
No.
And
I'm also doing stuff over at What the Flick on YouTube, which this week Christy Lemire and I had a lot of fun, and she did the entire intro in Spanish without telling me she was going to do it.
I didn't know she knew Spanish.
She speaks very good Spanish, as it turns out.
What was the reason for speaking Spanish?
I think she just felt like it.
There's no Spain movies out.
No, she just suddenly.
I mean, you know, in Spain there are.
She got a wild hair and just decided that was what she was going to do. So.
My mind just went blank. Fill in the dead air.
Oh, noes. So this week we're talking about, I still want to apologize for last week.
You deserve to give everyone an apology.
Oh, shut up. I had it all planned. We pre-taped an episode in advance so that even though we were on vacation last week,
Mr. Big Ideas,
there would be a new episode because Dave White doesn't care about you the way I do, dear listeners. And he was just gonna,
I care about a lot of things.
He was just going to skip a week and that would be that. But I cared. And I said, let's pre-tape a show.
I cared enough to do it, didn't I? That
you did, yes.
Yeah.
Under duress, but you did it. So we did it. We did our first special. Well, I guess maybe second if you count our Oscar show. But we did it. We did a special episode. It was all about movies that we wish were on DVD. And it was entertaining and ebullient and effervescent.
It was whatever.
And the audio was totally screwed up in the middle.
We sound like
crazy robots.
We sound like crazy robots. We sound like vocals on some kind of obscure
trance track.
Witch house sort of track.
Not even our dear friend Dan Bidwaugh could rescue our audio. So, that's just going to be our legendary. So that's going to be our legendary lost episode.
Lost episode.
Perhaps one day.
I don't even remember what.
Perhaps one day when we have the website up and going, I will sit down and type the whole thing and do a transcript. Which won't be the same, but
it'll be the same. It'll totally be the same.
Anyway.
People will just imagine you talking like you and me talking like me while they read the thing.
And they can stage it with puppets at home. So sorry that didn't work out. We really did want to have an episode for you last week, and we recorded one and everything, but 'twas not meant to be. And we're hoping that this one does not screw up.
I was eating lobster rolls.
There could be some crazy...
And I didn't really...
audio issue, and so maybe even this one won't air. We'll figure it out. Anyway, we were out of town. We went to Maine and to Massachusetts, and we ate a lot of shellfish, and we had a great time. So
yeah.
It's nice to be home, though. It's always nice to be home.
Sure.
So nothing like flying back in after a full day of traveling and immediately having to go out to see the Smurfs.
Which is exactly what happened to us.
But that's the life we lead.
That's not made up. That's not a fake story.
This is what we've taken on.
We got off the plane. We got off the plane and we had to go see the Smurfs that very night.
Yeah.
I don't even have the words for that movie.
The Smurfs it's worse than I thought it was going to be, and that's saying something, because I was never a fan of the Smurfs in the first place.
A plate of D with a side of B.
I have no nostalgic...
You know what I mean.
Yes, I know what you mean. I'm sure our listeners do, too. I have no nostalgic affection for the Smurfs. I mean, I was too old for the Smurfs. I missed that whole thing. But even if you did, I can't imagine that you wouldn't find this movie just repellent, because it's so obnoxious and so stridently not funny, and at the same time trying to like be sarcastic and snarky and deconstructing the whole Smurfs thing anyway, where like Neil Patrick Harris asks them, so do you get your names first or do you have to display some sort of character trait? I mean, just stuff like that. It's like, it's just not funny, you know? And you could have taken that route, but you'd have to write funnier dialogue.
Here are the jokes. Here's a typical Smurfs movie joke. Clumsy Smurf accidentally trips over something. And then everybody goes, "Clumsy!" And then he goes, "Huh, I guess I'm just clumsy." And then you keep waiting like for maybe something else to like happen, but no. That was the joke. That was the joke. Like this, everything is like
someone fell.
Isn't it crazy how clumsy you are? You know, or you know, Grumpy or Sneezy Smurf or whatever it is will sneeze, and everyone will go, "Oh, Sneezy," and he'll just go, "Sorry, I just sneeze a lot." You know, like there's nothing. There's actually
I'm pretty sure there's
nothing,
not a Sneezy Smurf.
I know, but
I get your
nothing going on here.
No,
nothing going on.
The only parts that I laughed even a little were basically Hank Azaria abusing the cat.
Right.
And again, I would not want to be the one to have to tell
their
kids.
You
want to
be a grown-up in the movie with the kid being like, "Oh, I'm going to go home and put the cat in the garbage disposal now."
Yeah, that'll be hilarious. Yeah.
And cats, real-life cats will die as a result of this film. There will be a real-life cat somewhere in the United States that dies because of this movie.
You think?
Because yes, because some child with a parent who was drunk or asleep during the movie will go home and take the kitty and submit it to some sort of horrible abuse, and the cat will die.
Well, that kid's going to get a face full of claw first. So at least it's sort of a fair fight, I guess.
Yeah. Because that's, I mean, it's
I mean, the cat in the movie is CG, and it's even got, they even have the little Humane Society seal of approval at the end of it, which
right, because the real cat that they modeled it for just
not
sat around
set.
Eating tuna fish.
Right.
That was just, they took a picture of it.
Yeah.
And then animated that cat.
Right.
That cat is, there's not a real minute of cat in this whole movie.
No.
No. But yeah, Gargamel is actually the best thing about the film.
Yeah.
The other good thing about it, and if you really wanted to go see it, and I recommend this in the actual review that I wrote, is that just go and pretend it's all about Neil Patrick Harris and Jaima Mays.
But they're not that they're all that interesting
it
either.
It won't be interesting, but it'll. I referenced the website Garfield minus Garfield in my review. And then the other one, I don't know what it's called, where they take the last panel off the Peanuts strip.
Yeah, so it's all existential angst.
Yeah. They take the most like existentially terrifying Peanuts strips and then remove the fourth.
The punchline.
The punchline. So all you get is, and then you're alone. Like that. Because that's always something Charlie Brown or
life is blank and meaningless.
Yeah. And so if you watch it that way, at least you're contributing to, you know, the culture of
deconstructionism.
But just reappropriation.
I see.
And misuse. With intent.
Yeah. Well, so, it's not worth paying.
But it's not worth
the
any money.
$10.
No, you don't want to.
No, yeah. It's a misery.
You'd have to
misery.
You'd have to be making it all up in your head.
Yes, and apparently it's going to be the number one weekend of the movie of the number one movie of the weekend. So eat it, Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah, I just my favorite part is when Neil Patrick Harris, because here's the thing: that not only does he have to learn to take care of and corral the Smurfs who have invaded his home. But he has to learn to love the idea of impending fatherhood because Jaima Mays' character is pregnant.
Right.
And at one point, he not only lashes out at the Smurfs, but at his own forthcoming fetus.
Yes.
And Jaima Mays gets this look on her face like, he doesn't want to be a father after all. You know, like it's this really sort of
are you going
to
say what I think you're about to say?
No,
you're going to say it. Go ahead.
Smurfbortion.
Okay. Well, God.
I made myself laugh when I talked to you.
And it's that kind of movie. You have to make yourself laugh because the movie's certainly not helping in that regard. Oh, God. And Tim Gunn queening it up to an embarrassing degree.
Tim Gunn, I, up until a week ago, thought Tim Gunn was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But then he comes out. And talks a lot of ish about Hillary Clinton's body and wardrobe choices.
He was mean to Tony once.
I don't know what happened with Tony.
They talk about it on the podcast.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
How come you didn't tell me about this?
I'm sure I did at the time.
I don't think you
did. I think I did.
But hang on. Let me back up a bit with this Tony thing. Uh-huh. Did Tony deserve it?
No.
Really?
Well, not the way Tony tells it. No.
Did Tony say something smart mouth?
No.
To Mr.
Not
to
at
Mr.
all.
Gunn.
He was apparently being very nice, and Mr. Gunn was being very dismissive.
Really?
However, I'm sure Mr. Gunn has his own version of this story, so who knows?
I'm not saying that Tony is always saying smart mouth things. But Tony is always saying smart
and
mouth
Tony
things.
Would be the first to cop to that. But no, he was not. But apparently, like Tim Gunn just thought he had, you know, cheek or something.
Tony does have cheek.
No, but not in a but not in the exchange that they had. It was basically something along the lines of like Tony was going to possibly be working on some show that Gunn was involved in, and Tim Gunn was like, "Well, I don't know anything about that," and was being very kind of
oh, like who are you,
exactly.
Little man?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, well, then screw Tim Gunn.
Yeah,
yeah. Anyway,
and then on top of that, he does this.
Then he wait, let's back up a bit.
Okay.
Then he comes out and says Hillary Clinton has cankles.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Them's fighting words.
Well, no, they're not. You know what? Lots of people have cankles. You know what you can do about it? Almost nothing. And it's not about being fat or skinny. It's just some bodies.
It's a shape thing.
Some bodies are just shaped that way. So what if she has cankles? I hope she rocks them all over the place. Of course she doesn't, because she wears pants.
Pantsuits, yeah.
Yeah. And which would be a very Trini and Susanna from What Not to Wear.
Solution. For cankles.
For cankles. And so not only is he talking about her cankles, but he tells her, he says on some show or interview that the way she dresses makes him think that she's confused about her gender. Yeah. Tim Gunn said this.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Tim Gunn said this. Yeah. So then he comes along and performs in this movie in a way that is actually stupider and more. He's only got a small role. It's more than a cameo. It's less than a supporting role. It's a little. He pops in every 15 minutes and says, "Well, hello." You know, like it's very weird. But you know, everyone at this point knows how he talks and moves and walks. He's a visibly gay dude. Like he walks that way, he talks that way, he acts that way. He's, you know, designers, you know, like that. That's right. What he is, and that's lovable about him. But it's like he took himself and
he did the blue collar comedy tour version of Tim Gunn.
Yeah, like he impersonated himself as some other guy who's even weirder and gayer and not as witty.
Yeah, no,
exactly. He is, because every line of dialogue he has, obviously written for him by someone else, is like, presentation is everything, you know, like, thanks, gay. That's because that's a thing that gays say.
And he even says, make it work.
He tells Neil Patrick Harris
to make it work.
To make it work.
Oh, stop it. Which is topped in this film only by Katy Perry. Smurfette, voiced by Katy Perry, saying, I kissed a Smurf and I liked it. Like, oh my God, will you all shut up and go away?
It's toxic. It is a garbage movie.
Yeah.
That I can't even.
It's soul draining.
Yeah. Because I love a good garbage movie. The Roommate. But I don't love.
Yeah, this. Like when people talk about like what's the difference between good bad movies and bad movies. This is a bad movie because it just makes you want to claw your own eyes.
I fidgeted constantly.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing where, like, when some line of dialogue signals that, oh, wait, there's a whole other act coming up.
Right. Like, when's it over?
I turned to Dave White in the middle of this movie. Remember how awesome Winnie the Pooh was and how it was only 68 minutes long?
Remember back in the good old days of 2 weeks ago when we saw Winnie the Pooh and it was 68 minutes long? And it could have been twice that long and still been awesome. And I would have been
riveted, yes.
Yeah. And this could have been 62 minutes long and
been
still
endless.
Felt like torture. Yeah.
Yes.
We saw it at the Grove, right? We saw it at the Grove?
Yes. With the stupid expand glasses.
Yeah. The worst
3D.
3D that they make. And when I'm at the Grove watching a movie and it's a horribly bad movie, like not even in a fun way, like getting back to The Roommate, which is a topic of conversation that I had already this week on movies.com with Gray on our Critics Corner that's up right now on the site, where we have a monthly dialogue, a conversation about stuff. And we're talking about our favorite movies and the things we hated so far in the first 6 months of the year. And we talk about The Roommate quite a bit.
A movie which
but we had a blast.
I don't ever want to see again. Let's be clear about that.
We had a really good time watching The Roommate because...
Did you watch it together?
Yeah,
well, that I'm sure that helped. I went alone at midnight.
We were talking. We sat
because they didn't show it to the press, and I had to see it for.
We sat there together and said fun things back and forth to each other. You know, quietly. We weren't, you know, Statler and Waldorf.
Right.
I mean, we sat in the Statler and Waldorf seats, though.
Nice.
At the Grove, where they have that's like the only good thing about the Grove.
That little mezzanine-y thing.
Yeah, and there's good garbage movies, and then there's this. And when I'm at the Grove seeing a bad garbage movie, all I start thinking about is like the vanilla fudge at the fudge stand in the farmer's market or like the crepe place because they make those nice Nutella crepes over there.
God, see, you shouldn't be telling me this stuff because now all I'll be thinking about is how I have a Yelp coupon for a free flan at Little Spain.
Yeah. And you should go get one.
Yes.
You should walk out of the movie, go get your flan. That it will be free, right?
Maybe it's with a meal. I don't know.
Well, you better check that coupon.
Well, obviously.
Yeah. You go get the flan, get it to go.
Sneak it back into the
movie. Bring it back into the movie. You will have missed nothing. And the rest of the movie will be at least delicious.
Yeah. Here's an example. Okay, the Smurfs is like what?
Let's spend the whole time talking about the Smurfs.
It's like, what, 100 minutes, let's say?
Probably.
Yeah. Okay, that was on Wednesday night. On Thursday night,
yeah.
I went to the LA County Museum of Art to see Christian Marclay's 24-hour film installation, The Clock, which is basically all shots from movies and TV shows of clocks or people saying what time it is or scenes where there's a clock in the background, and it runs in real time for 24 hours.
Let's pause right here for a moment. Uh-huh. You did not spend 24 hours there.
No, I did not. But
and I was not with you because I had to go see The Help.
Right, which I'm seeing later.
Yeah.
But,
and I will talk about that when it opens.
When it opens.
Yeah.
But, so I got there at 4:30, which is when they started, with the 4:30 p.m. segment of the film. And I stayed there for 9 hours with 1 5-minute bathroom and snack break.
I tell you, you are Iron Man with that thing.
But I was entranced.
Doesn't matter.
I was riveted. And I was like,
I've been a Christian Marclay fan, a bona fide
Christian Marclay
fan. I know,
the first piece of art you ever bought
the
was
80s.
Christian Marclay.
Since the 80s, I have dug that guy, and it was the first piece of what I consider to be, you know, art I bought was one of his, you know, multiple in a huge edition, which,
right,
you
right.
know. But I am a huge fan, and you know what? Even for him, I ain't going to sit through 9 hours. That movie will screen again. And I will see it in 2 to 3 hour chunks, maybe 4 if I'm feeling hardy.
I didn't really know going in how long I was going to do it or how often I would go take a break or whatever.
Right.
But I was riveted. And the thing is, this is a movie that is literally about the passing of time. So it's not like you lose track of how long you've been there. You know exactly how long you've been there because the movie is constantly telling you what time it is.
I want to know who stayed for the entire 24 hours.
I'm sure somebody did. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it flew by. And if I didn't have to get up on Friday morning to see Cowboys and Aliens, I would have stayed longer because it was just fascinating. And I'm not a conceptual art person, as you know. But somehow, because this was...
That's right.
Because this was so much about the movies themselves and sort of our collective unconscious of like all the movies and TV shows we've ever seen all kind of mashed up into one giant thing, I was just like, oh my God, what is 7:32 going to be? Where's that clip going to come from? You know? And then there was it got very crowded at midnight. Everybody wanted to see what midnight was going to be.
Yeah.
And there was the explosion. They blew up Big Ben from V for Vendetta. And then there were a lot of sort of individual shots of clocks at midnight.
I was a little disappointed by your report.
But yes, there were no Poseidon Adventure. And no Ninotchka either, that line about where you know, he's the one hand is making love to the other or whatever, you know.
Right.
Yeah, but anyway.
That makes me obvious, I know, but whatever.
But it's one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life. And I want to see the other 15 hours now, you know.
Right.
And I've heard from people who were there for different chunks of it. And so, like, obviously, you know, if you're there for the morning parts, it's a lot of shots of people waking up and people making breakfast and going to school and, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
I was, since I started at 4:30, I saw like at 5 o'clock and at 6 o'clock and at 7 o'clock, a lot of people getting off work, you know, punching out, making dinner, whatever.
Right. Anything from the Flintstones movie?
No.
Also disappointed.
Well, that's, yeah, no, that the film nerd that I was actually sitting there thinking, oh, they didn't do this. They didn't, like, I was cataloging ones they didn't
do. I'm just thinking
do.
About Fred chunking out of
right,
the,
right.
And
no,
that's
but,
in the movie.
But they did have Sissy Spacek chunking out in Three Women, which was cool. and it, between 5 and 7 p.m., I caught only one shot from Cleo from 5 to 7, which surprised me. Because that's an entire movie of a woman looking at the clock.
Right.
Or at least it being present. You know?
Right.
Although there were two different Keith Coogan movies featured between 5 and 5:30. Go figure. Anyway, it was fascinating. And if you're in a city where this thing is showing, go see it. It's just breathtaking. And literally, I would not have expected that I would sit there for 9 hours, but I did, and I could have stayed longer. It was that good.
And then you had to get up in the morning.
And then I had to get up in the morning and see Cowboys.
And we went to see Cowboys and Aliens. which
is not terrible.
You know what? Here's the thing. It's now been a day since we've seen it.
Yeah.
And when I walked out yesterday, I think my words to you were, that was silly, but fine.
Mm-hmm.
But and I believe the review I gave it on the site was like a two out of five stars. You know, like, it's whatever. It's passable.
Mm-hmm.
I'd downgrade it, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I think the more I think about it, the more kind of... I wish I had more time sometimes. Like, the reason we went Friday morning is because we were on vacation away out of town. We missed the press screening. And often I wish I had more time to think about stuff. But instead of having to turn copy around
fast
all the time. Because now I think it's kind of barf. Like, today I'm kind of not into it at all.
It's so... generic. I mean, it. There's nothing special about it. You know, it's got this. Their title is their pitch, and that's kind of it. Like, there's the characters aren't interesting. It's just. I don't know. I think maybe just we've been worn down by so many sort of big stupid movies of late that this one's not awful.
I've had a little time. The more I think about it, the more I think is that
it is awful.
It is awful because it's, and this is going to sound too highfalutin. Maybe I don't know. I don't care. I'm highfalutin.
Go on.
Yeah. I want surprising, inventive cinema.
Fair enough.
I want things to be cinematic, in the old school sense of that word, in the egg-headed sense of that word. That's what I want.
You wanted more John Ford and less Ron Howard.
Yes. Because I think he's I think John Favreau, who I find to be a perfectly agreeable director, he makes me laugh.
Yeah.
He made
Elf, for God's
sake. He made Elf, which is a delight.
Yes,
Elf, then there's like, I think sometimes when the big bosses are standing over your shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just imagine him directing this film with Ron Howard looking over one shoulder, Steven Spielberg looking over the other shoulder, and like, Jon Favreau's one half of his brain is thinking, I am contractually obligated to Ron Howard. And then the other side of him is going like, oh God, I have to impress Mr. Spielberg. And I hope Jon Favreau never hears this. Because, again, I want to reiterate, I think he's kind of rad.
Up till now, yes.
I think he's kind of rad. This just drove me nuts a little bit. And every single thing, I even walked out yesterday thinking, well, I kind of like the creatures and the way their little hand claws come out and, you know, grab at you out of their chest cavity. And then the part, you know, there's a part where they wave those little doomy looking glowing wands at Daniel Craig, and I'm thinking, you know, and I turned to you in the movie and I said, oh, it's gonna be How the West Was Anally Probed. But it never does that. It never gets cool. It never goes full tilt crazy.
I was thinking today, I wasn't even sure why the aliens kidnap people. Does that ever really explain?
No. Other than to extract their watches and gold teeth. And but again, where I was going with this is that I think, you know, to be a film that qualifies as cinematic, you can't just borrow every single thing and not twist it in some little way, you know?
Improve upon it, come up with something new.
One of your complaints about people like Quentin Tarantino is that everything is borrowed. But one of the things I dig about Tarantino is that everything is borrowed and then reshaped somehow into his own vision.
Yeah, no, I have to say, I've come around on Tarantino a lot. I still don't like Pulp Fiction, but I think for a lot of his other films, he at least steals things with brio.
Even these monsters
are familiar.
Even Olivia Wilde, who turns out to be like, I won't.
A more interesting character than the girl.
Character than the girl, and who has real required presence in the movie, in an action
in the plot
way, in the plot. I saw Sigourney Weaver do all that stuff already.
And there's even a shot in this movie where like the alien is like screaming in somebody's face,
yes,
and it's right out of Aliens.
Right.
It's like, oh, come on.
And so I'm downgrading my 2-star review on movies.com to a 1.
Wow, okay.
Because the more I think about it, the more I actually hate it. Okay. Not as much as the Smurfs.
Because, yeah, well, but, no. Because, yeah, I mean, because the best I could come up with for Cowboys and Aliens was, well, it was okay. It was not the worst thing I've ever seen. This is the ultimate of damning with faint praise, you know. And apparently, there are 5 credited screenwriters on this thing. And of the dozen or so people that have worked on this stupid comic book adaptation for like the last decade.
That's the thing. And they already had a comic book to work from. And it still took them.
Well, I hear the comic book wasn't that great. Sort of like, apparently the comic book, the guy who did that was literally like giving it to stores. Like he just wanted the thing out there so that somebody would buy the movie rights.
Right.
So the comic book itself was always sort of a means to an end.
A loss leader.
Yeah, it was so that we could get this stupid movie, and now we have it.
I
hope you're happy.
I might recommend seeing it just as the like if you're in a film class. I might recommend you watch it as an example of screenwriting by committee.
Yeah.
And an example of
workmanlike
of things
cinema.
That don't things that are just rehashed again and again. And like how to know that when you're seeing it.
Right.
That is its value. You know, when you have to see everything, when it's your living to see everything, or almost everything. You find a way to justify that 2 hours and be like, well, here's what I learned from watching Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah.
This thing that I already knew, but here's another example of it. And they're
la-di-da.
Yeah.
So, our other big movie opening this weekend is Crazy Stupid Love.
Which is looking a whole lot better now compared to everything else. Although when we walked out of it the night we saw it, I was like, eh.
You were way more down on it than I was, yeah. Yeah, of the three, that's definitely the peach. It's funny what you were saying about the further you get away from a movie. I came out of Crazy Stupid Love really having enjoyed it, because I laughed a lot. And with time, I've realized there are a lot of laughs, but there's also a lot of stupid. I mean, and not in the movie way, but there's a lot of like sort of lame, contrived sitcom, you know, dullness that undercuts the good parts of the movie. So I still recommend it to people because I think the funny stuff is really funny, but it is unfortunately washed away in a river of schmaltz by the end of it.
We're about to talk about the new Miranda July movie, The Future.
Is that this week?
Yeah, and it opened. On Friday.
I see, okay.
And here is something that angers me about Crazy Stupid Love, and that I will refer to again when we talk about The Future.
Mm-hmm.
In a movie that is set in the real world, with people that are supposed to be recognizable to you, people that you could maybe know, who are going through stuff that happens to everybody. Everybody falls in love. Everybody has problems with their relationships. Big movies won't let you fall down. They won't let anyone fall down. They won't take you past the sadness of the middle of Act 3. The middle of Act 3 is 5 to 10 minutes of misunderstanding, hurt feelings, sadness. Is this going to really work out between us? Is it not? Are we ever going to be the same people again? Can you ever forgive me? Strum, strum, strum. Whisper, whisper, whisper song. And then the happy ending that you paid good money for comes right around the corner. And you know what? That ain't real life.
But you know what? But here's the thing. Even taking all of that into account, which is true, even in the standards of the Hollywood romantic comedy and what we've come to expect of it and the conventions of the genre, Crazy Stupid Love is still a big mess of phony.
That is also true. But I was
because okay. It didn't bother me because it wasn't Miranda July and it wasn't all super realistic. But even in the context of what we are willing to accept from a Hollywood movie as far as the sort of glossy veneer of phony cheeriness, whatever, even on those with those generous standards, Crazy Stupid Love still feels contrived and phony and ridiculous.
Well, yeah, because of a thing that I won't, some plot details that I don't want to
no, we're not going to talk about
give away because it involves, you know, if you're an adult and you go see this movie, you'll know that, well, everybody has to have some kind of connection. You just don't know what it is. There's no good reason for Ryan Gosling to be in this movie. There's no reason for Ryan Gosling to step up to Steve Carell and be like, "I'm going to fix your game." There isn't. But then the movie tells you what the reason is later, because it has to, because there has to be a reason.
But actually, no, you're getting it backwards, because
how?
Because whatever we find out later does not explain why he...
No, it doesn't.
No.
But it's a reason why the camera's pointing at him.
Right, I know. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But even still, though, I think that... Again, and I talked about this with Christy on What the Flick. Like, I was willing to accept the hurdle of this young stud is going to take this middle-aged sad sack under his arm, under his wing, and, like, you know, give him a makeover and teach him how to be... Right. Even after accepting that, it's still like strains credibility in a lot of ways. And I'm being super generous to this movie as a Hollywood romantic comedy. I'm not expecting, you know, verite realness. And even in those parameters, it still, I think, far extends the suspension of disbelief that most people would be willing to give it.
Marissa Tomei is funny.
Everyone's funny.
Yeah. Everyone except Julianne Moore,
who cries a lot. They don't give her anything funny to do, but everybody else is funny. Emma Stone is charming. Ryan Gosling is really funny.
Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone have actual sort of chemistry.
Yes. I forgot.
Yes. I like Knives Chow.
Knives Chow. I don't know her name. I need to learn her name.
I don't know her. Yeah.
But she was very funny. And Josh Groban was funny in this movie.
Josh Groban could have been funnier. He's actually in real life very funny. For being such...
Well, he was funny on Glee.
That's a dude who sings music that I never want to ever hear in my life.
Right.
He's actually a totally funny guy.
Huh.
And so they could have allowed him to be funnier. Like, I have a feeling that he could maybe improv. I think he's that possibly capable of that. I mean, he's not known as an actor, but...
Right.
But...
Maybe he'll do a movie with Justin Timberlake.
I've seen him be funny. Yeah, like, I can imagine him being in some sort of Andy Samberg thing.
Huh.
Because he's got that sort of knowing, like, he knows what he does for a living.
Knows what we think about that.
And he knows what we think about that.
Right.
And he thinks that's funny too in some way.
Yeah.
Like, he can get up on stage and sing You Raise Me Up or whatever that song is called for, like, all the 60-year-old ladies. But on some other level, he's still a young guy.
Yes.
And he knows.
Yeah. It's like when Wayne Brady used to do the Chappelle Show.
Right. Like, he knows he's Wayne Brady.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what people think of Wayne Brady.
Exactly.
You know. And so that's like, I wish I would like to see more of Josh Groban in a movie. But just a funnier movie and a better movie.
I had a good enough time that I would send people to this movie, but I would say it will benefit from watching it on cable, and then later you'll rewatch it, and you'll skip the parts that are barf, and you'll just sit through the really funny
stuff. It'll be like when you're sick, and you've ordered chicken soup from Greenblatt's, and you're like, oh, Crazy Stupid Love is on?
All right.
I wish P.S. I Love You was on instead.
Practical Magic.
Because I'm feeling pretty rotten.
Magic is the flu movie.
Practical Magic. Any Sandra Bullock movie is the flu movie.
Except Crash.
Yeah. Crash doesn't warm you.
No. Although laughter is the best medicine.
The good Sandra Bullock part of Crash.
Yes.
Is worth looking at again and again and again on an infinite loop.
Yes, where she falls down the steps. Yeah, whoop, and never falls down.
Yeah, again, just keep falling down the steps.
All right, so The Future opened this week? I didn't realize.
It did.
Okay.
Now, you were talking about, just a second ago, you were sort of, and I think unintentionally, you were saying that The Future was, like, more realistic, but it's not. It's full of wildly unreal things.
Realistic is not the word I meant. Let's say emotionally honest.
Yeah. Why don't you talk about what the future is about?
Okay. The future is
Miranda. So that I can tell you why you're wrong.
Uh-huh. The future is Miranda July's second film. She did Me and You and Everyone We Know, which I liked. But this one, not so much. It's about.
By the way, before he gets going, we had about a 45-minute argument after this movie was over.
Yes. And I kept saying we should save it for the podcast.
Oh, here we go.
All right.
Yeah. So it ain't going to be 45 minutes.
No. Okay.
But, yeah.
So, okay. So it's about these two sort of like slackery adults played by Miranda July and Hamish Linklater. And they are 30 days away from adopting a cat who they found in the streets who's been wounded.
Can you do the voice of
and the cat?
Paw the cat.
The cat narrates the film, voiced by Miranda July in this very sort of. Let me see if I can do it.
Do it.
They said they would come for me, and I gave them the purring sound that seems like contentedness, and I think I meant it.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
But that's not a bad approximation. The movie starts with that.
Yeah.
And if you are the kind of person like, oh, say, me, you hear someone doing that and you think, okay, I'm leaving right now.
Run, like, run, don't walk to the nearest exit.
So keep going.
Okay, so
this cat is dying.
The cat is dying.
And narrating the film.
Yes. Okay. And so they can't take it home for another 30 days. And so they are both Hamish Linklater and Miranda July are this sort of like they're not even hipsters. They're just sort of they're slackers, I guess. You know, he does like.
I think they used to be hipsters. That's my read
aging
on them.
Hipsters.
That my read on them is that they used to be hipsters because they live in an apartment that is kind of shabby.
It's cluttered bohemian, sort
but
of.
But cluttered bohemian and. And in a way that just sort of meant that at around age 30, they gave up on trying to be cooler,
to keep up with things, yeah.
To try to be cool. And so now everything is just sort of stagnant in their in their apartment.
So he does like, you know, tech support on the phone, and she teaches dance classes to like 6-year-old girls who jump around. And they realize that having this cat is going to completely change their lives and really sort of now they're going to have to become responsible and blah blah blah. So they have to they basically give themselves
they have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
And they say, well, we're 35. And they say the cat, under the best of circumstances, could possibly live with proper care 4 to 5 more years. And then they say that, you know, but after that, then you're 40, and then 10 years later you're 50, and then after 50
it's over.
It's over.
Yeah.
For you as a human being on the planet. There's nothing left that you'll be able to accomplish that's any good after 50. And so they decide that, well, that means our lives have to change right now.
Yeah. So they give themselves a month, basically, to try and accomplish something so they can have made their mark before the cat comes to live with them. So he goes to work for this, like, he goes door to door trying to sign people up to, like, buy trees. And she
dances.
Tries to come up with like 30 dances,
30 dances in 30 days,
but very quickly becomes frustrated.
For the internet. She wants to put them up on YouTube.
Yeah.
A dance a day to gain internet notoriety.
And so no one accomplishes anything, and then their relationship goes horribly asunder, and things go from bad to worse, basically.
And they go from real to unreal.
Yes.
Because not only do you have a narrating cat, which is sort of like a signal that anything can happen in this movie. That
you also find out that one of them has abilities regarding time and space.
A superpower. And there's also a t-shirt that is alive.
A living creature.
It is alive. Yeah. Meanwhile, Miranda July goes off.
Doesn't this sound great?
Has an affair with a guy. Who
with a widower? With a,
he's divorcee. Like a widower, divorcee. He's got a young daughter.
Yeah,
a young daughter who spends a lot of her time in the backyard trying to dig her own grave.
Right. And the guy that she's having an affair with is very sort of like middle aged.
Nothing interesting about
regular
him at all,
guy,
which I think is sort of, you know, what she feels like she wants.
Right.
And Now tell them what you think about this movie, because we're gonna. This is gonna be a. We're. You, I'm gonna follow.
I have. Again, the recurring theme of this show is like movies change the further you get away from them. I'm a little more forgiving of this film, but ultimately, to me, it just felt like she creates these two sort of irresponsible characters, and then wants us to watch as they do irresponsible things and screw up their lives. And I just didn't find that very appealing, and I didn't see what the point of it was. It just seemed like kind of white people, first world problems, you know, like, hey, these characters are twits, and now guess what? They're going to act like twits and bigger twits for the next 90 minutes. Ta-da! And I don't know, I really liked Me and You and Everyone We Know. I thought that was a film that actually seemed to have some compassion for its characters and sort of, you know, cared about their wherewithal. And this movie just sort of seemed like, wow, these people are jerks, and now they're going to do jerky things. The end.
And now here's why you're wrong.
Uh-huh.
It is a satire about narcissism and about the consequences of narcissism, the real consequences of narcissism. It is about assuming that you are special and not finding out that you aren't until too late. And I believe it's also about Miranda July in a very real way. I think her, and not about her as a person, but her as a public figure. Mm-hmm. She has become sort of a lightning rod for
hipsterphobia,
hatred of what people refer to now as hipsters.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she's beyond. I think she's completely beyond that, and I don't think she's. I don't think she is, as a filmmaker, or probably even as a person, the thing that she's being accused of. I think that she is poking at that idea in this very movie by showing you the aftermath, kind of hipsterism, by showing you like where all of your vain attempts at setting yourself apart without doing anything with your life.
But
and hang on, I didn't argue with you. Let me finish my point.
Okay.
Here.
Go on.
I believe it's a very, very specific movie about two very specific people who when they find out that they do have weird special things going on in their life, when one of them does discover they have a superpower, when one of them, you know, does become aware that there's a living t-shirt following them around, they can't even do anything right with that stuff. And so, in fact, both of them are misused. Both of those weird special things are misused. Advice that they get from old wise people?
Ignored.
And then comes that middle of that third act where you worry about what's going to happen to them, to the cat, to everybody in the movie. And then what happens is, I will say this, and I don't care if it makes me sound like a simp, it is the most heartbreaking movie I have seen all year. I have not walked out of a movie that sad inside in I don't know how long. I have not seen a movie this sad, genuinely sad, about failure in, I can't even imagine. I can't even think about how long. It is one of the best things I've seen all year.
Mm.
It is moving because it doesn't. She refuses to protect her characters. She's sympathetic to them. She feels for them. She's somewhere inside them, I think. She refuses to protect them, any of them, and refuses to protect the audience by giving them a way out. This movie is about the consequences of failing to live and being afraid of the title.
Hmm.
It's amazing. I will pay money to see this movie again.
No, I see what you got out of it, and I will acknowledge that those things are there. I just found it unbearable.
All the decorative, quirky bits that people would that clutter other independent film. She has a reason for putting it there. It's not just to be cute. It's about seeing the real world through this fractured like lens of weirdness.
I just found the characters to be unspeakably tedious.
They are.
And I didn't care what happened to them. The whole, I want to be an artist, but I don't know what I want to express. Like, I've seen, how many Woody Allen movies have we seen that character in?
A lot.
Like, I don't care. I'm not remotely interested. And so when you give me these characters who I can tell in the first 5 minutes are like losers.
What happens to Diane Wiest at the end of Hannah and Her Sisters?
She gets pregnant.
Right. What is she? She's the frustrated go nowhere artist
right.
in Hannah and Her Sisters. And right. what does she get? She gets her happy ending, which is fine. And if you can write a fun, lovable, happy ending like Hannah and Her Sisters, great.
Okay. No. Do not turn this where, like, if you don't like this movie, it's because you only want happy endings.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that when.
These characters to me felt like straw men. It's like. It's made clear from the get-go that they're not going to accomplish anything, that they're not going to make the right decisions.
But it's not clear because her first film had a very sort of uplift feel to it. It was lovable and much more accessible in terms of, you know, you feel but generous
what, but
toward
what,
them.
But what is the point? What are we supposed to learn in a film where despicable people behave despicably?
They're not despicable. They don't do anything despicable. They do things. They do nothing
They do nothing selfish that and they're anybody stupid else would and they're irritating.
Yeah, they're selfish and they're irritating, like everybody.
To me, I didn't see the point of it. It's like, I'm not saying they had to learn something, but if they start out already as being, you know, these narcissistic twits, and then they continue to act like narcissistic twits, why have I spent 100 minutes in their company?
I do not believe they are any more narcissistic or twitty than any other character in any other independent film out there.
Well, that bar has been lowered substantially.
This is what should happen to every other character in every other independent film out there. This is the real ending of those other films. This is the real story of those other films. Plus, you know, a talking moon, a living T-shirt, and a person with superpowers, and a narrating cat. The cat. I swear, the cat narration by the end of the movie, it hurt me. Not because I was irritated by the voice. I got used to the intentionally irritating, scratchy baby voice of the cat. That my widow feelings, like, that's the cat's voice. I got used to that, but it was the things the cat was saying that just stab you.
Because
the cat needs these people to step up and do.
Yes, I know. And this movie wants to break your heart, and it broke yours, obviously. But I'm sorry. If these characters have been established from the get-go as being morons, then it's not going to break my heart when their being moronic carries itself through. And yes, granted, there are a lot of movies about morons, and usually they get their act together and they learn something and right. blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, fine. Points to the future for letting these people carry out their destiny of moronicness. But that's it. That's all this movie brings to the table.
And you're saying that that Miranda July's filmmaking is lacking because she didn't make you care about them.
I suppose.
Okay. Well, that's where we differ, because I feel like she's a really, really smart and self-assured filmmaker.
I think
and
a
knows
lot,
exactly what she wants to do.
There's
and is
a
doing
lot.
It.
There's a lot of preciousness going on here.
I know.
And you, yeah,
yes,
and
there
I,
is.
And you think it's intentional whatever, but
it's intentional.
Yeah, you liked Beginners and all those stupid drawings and all the...
Also intentional.
Yeah.
Also intentional. Yeah. I'm a big fan of her and her husband and the way they express themselves, because I don't think it is whimsy for whimsy's sake.
I want them
I
to
think
express
that
themselves
they want to communicate,
not in movie theater so I can ignore
they
them.
They want to communicate actual feeling through things that we recognize as
fake feeling?
As, no, actual feeling through things that we recognize as signifiers of warmth and humanity. Like the little kitty and these adorable drawings in Beginners and the little puppy and be, like all the things that you think of as cute and precious and whimsical are the doorway you have to walk through to get to the other side with them. And I honestly, I believe that these two movies are like sort of, they're complementary in a very real way.
Yes, I hated them both.
He, in Beginners, Ewan McGregor meets this woman and she's strange to him. And she even says, can you love a very strange girl? And I was thinking, that's Miranda July. That's who she is supposed to be. That's her character.
And there's a talking dog.
Yeah. I think these two movies go hand in hand. And that's a good thing.
Okay, now I didn't hate Beginners, but I found it twee, and I found this one twee too.
You know me. I'm not down for twee. But I'm down for people who take twee and can use it for their own purposes.
I think there's a specific brand of art gallery intellectual that you are allowing to get away with stuff that another filmmaker you wouldn't. It's like
it's not them getting away with something. They are utilizing this stuff as tools.
It's the same way that I think that you wouldn't have been so kind to Film Socialism if it didn't say it was a Jean-Luc Godard film.
Wrong.
I think you are being dazzled by labels.
You're wrong. You're wrong about me. You don't know my life.
Oh, I know your life. I know it
no,
real well.
I'm not dazzled by labels. I believe that you have insulted me just now.
Well,
there you go. I'm insulted.
Fine.
Outraged by your insultingness to me. Dazzled by labels. Turn off that mic. We're going to have a real conversation.
I'm sorry. I can't understand why else you would let Mike Mills and Miranda July get away with stuff that I think in other films.
They're not getting away with anything. They are accomplishing their goals.
I think that from other filmmakers, you would call it out as being ridiculous.
Because other filmmakers can't handle this stuff properly. Other filmmakers take this stuff and turn it into just a pile of cute bleh. That's not what they do. That's not what they do.
They turn it into gritty, artsy bleh.
But bleh, nonetheless. Now, we're gone on vacation.
Yes.
We did not talk about Captain America. Let's take 1 minute to talk about Captain America. All right.
I liked looking
then we'll
at it.
Then we'll do DVDs and then we're going to go.
Okay, I liked looking at it, but I found it just kind of uncompelling after a while. And I thought that there were little details that I really enjoyed, but then there's a big moment, like when he brings back all the prisoners, that you're supposed to be all like, yay!
I totally was!
I was not. And then there's the big thing at the end where he's supposed to be, oh, boo-hoo, and I totally was not.
And I totally was!
Oh, God, no. So, all right, well, you are a sap.
I'm going to say this, just like I was going to downgrade Cowboys and Aliens from a 2-1. My 3.5, Captain America,
uh-huh.
Now that I've had time to think about it,
mm-hmm.
I'll bump it up another half a star. Ugh. At least loved it.
No.
So great.
No, no.
My favorite superhero movie of the summer, and I liked Thor.
No. God, this has been a lame-o summer for superheroes, but frankly, I liked Green Lantern better than I liked
America. You are now the one that is insane.
Mm.
You are the one that is, I can't say you're dazzled by labels because it doesn't matter. There's no label involved. But that's crazy talk. Crazy talk is
Okay, did you see Captain America in 2D or 3D?
3D.
Okay. Because I think I might have liked it better in 2. Because it was all, everything looked like it was filmed through khaki.
That's where my star, that's where the lack of that last star comes from. Because it looks too dark in 3D.
Okay. Do we want to talk about Friends with Benefits?
What?
Do we want to talk about Friends with Benefits?
Who cares?
Yeah, whatever.
Who cares? It's whatever. Yeah. Friends with Benefits is whatever. No, Captain America mm-hmm. not only looks awesome when you take the 3D glasses off.
Yes.
And it's good and bright.
Mm.
See it in 2D. If you haven't already gone out to see it, see it in 2D. It is that very sort of old-fashioned, like, rousing kind of movie. And I was on board every minute. Did you just burp?
Yes.
You just, what are you, Howard Stern?
Because you're talking about Captain America and you're giving me gas.
You just burped. That was the first burp we've ever had.
Yes.
Let's not become that. I like Howard Stern, but that's kind of ripping him off. Well, he's the only guy that burps on the mic.
Okay, sorry.
He owns that.
Anyway, yeah, Captain America, I just found it flat, and I did not get into it. And I enjoy the character in the comics, but, like, the character in the comics is kind of a stiff. He is, like, he is the least conflicted, least ironic
character,
and you have to do something to make him more interesting.
I was so pulling for him as a scrawny little wimp at the beginning of the movie. I felt so bad for him that when he finally becomes Captain America and he doesn't turn into a complete D-bag, he just is like, wow, look what is just happening to me. Now I can really go fight the bad guys. And he goes and fights the bad guys. And he's still sort of unsure of himself. And he's good-hearted and true. And it's just awesome. Such an awesome movie.
No.
I was so happy.
Wrong!
So happy watching Captain America.
Yeah. So, anyway. You enjoy that. I thought it was the stink. But I liked the art direction. That's about it. Not looking forward to seeing him in the Avengers movie. Or
my DVD
Thor,
recommendation of the week.
Yes.
Is Claire Denis' Trouble Every Day.
Because
I was just made to think about it earlier this morning. A friend of mine in England sent me a link to a thing that's going to happen in England. In October, the band Tindersticks, scores basically all of her movies, they're going to perform a show that is all music scored that they've created to score her films. And it's going to be like a montage of her films and them scoring them as they are on the screen. And they're going to perform the music live while the movies, chunks of the movies, play out on the screen. Mm-hmm. And so it made me think about Claire Denis again today. And I've already recommended White Material once as a DVD recommendation. And did it get released before or after we started the podcast? I may have already talked about White Material.
I think you've already talked about
but
the Criterion.
She and We're a Seth Gould are like they neck and neck with me as my favorite modern, you know, directors. Mm-hmm. And I just think Trouble Every Day is so great because
it's the one with Vincent Gallo.
It's the one with Vincent Gallo, and it's about these sex cannibals.
Yeah.
And they,
I don't want to say that.
They really just brutalize everyone that they encounter. And it's just about how, well, it felt to me like, I'm playing with a rubber band. That's this noise that you're hearing in the background. It felt to me at the time, it came out like 10 years ago, as sort of about, you know, the way that drugs and medicine affect people and the way we're all sort of like slaves to the pharmaceutical industry. And she uses this other crazy, she uses this crazy method to talk about, you know, body disfiguring illness and
the emo kid on Degrassi isn't feeling any emotions because they put him on anti-anxiety meds.
What's your DVD recommendation of the week, Alonzo?
Actually, one that was mentioned to me this morning that I had forgotten about that came out recently. They put out an entire box set of all of the Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy movies.
Oh, yeah?
All 7 or 9, I forget however many.
Including Desk Set.
Including Desk Set.
That's my favorite one.
Yes, it's awesome. But also Adam's Rib and Pat and Mike. And
I'm also a big fan of Adam's Rib.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never seen Pat and Mike, though.
It's fun.
Have you?
Yeah.
I've never seen Pat and Mike.
And, you know, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. And
my least favorite.
Probably, yes, I would say so. It's not dated real well. And then a lot of ones that people may have forgotten about, like, you know, Keeper of the Flame and State of the Union and stuff.
I've never seen either one of those.
So there's an entire box with all of their collaborations together, which is cool because some of the movies are owned by Turner, and some of the movies are owned by Sony, and some of the movies are owned by Fox. And a lot of times when a studio puts out a box set of a particular actor or director, they just put out the ones that that studio owns. And so you'll get like two or three classics and then some middling ones and then some real junky ones that just because it's in, just their, a filler. It's in their library. They have it. But here you have various studios collaborating on these two people to put out, to do all of their movies, even though they're owned by various people. And I would like to see more of that, frankly. So yeah, that's my pick of the week.
I'd like to see more of you agreeing with me about everything.
If you'd stop being wrong, maybe I would. thank you for joining us, listeners. You are awesome for being here, and we hope you'll tell your friends about the show. You can like us at Facebook. You can add our Twitter feed, LinoleumCast, and leave us a review at iTunes. Several of you have. We appreciate it. And listen to our friends in podcast land, the Popcorn Mafia, the Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli.
You can send us gift cards to Cinnabon.
You interrupted me. Now you want
Outback Steakhouse,
Blowhard, Secretly Timid, the podcast, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Glitter in the Garbage. And you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We have a listener who has been asking us for personal advice, and we have not gotten back to you yet.
But we got your email, and we're going to tell you everything we know about the subject that you have requested. And
for whatever good that will
do. It's not going to help you very much, but it's okay.
We'll give it our best shot, I promise. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
What? Oh, goodbye.